also. I'm not a god, Stoner said gently. Is there a god? Tavalera asked. Stoner's bearded face grew more serious. That's a question you'll have to answer for yourself, Raoul. Recovering her composure, Angelique asked, Will you meet with Archbishop Overmeyer tomorrow? Of course. Without the theatrics? Oh, you mean the way I enter a room? You don't want to give the old Archbishop a heart attack, Tavalera said, grinning. Stoner smiled back at him, but when he turned to Angelique, his expression grew more serious. Is that true? He asked. She felt a shock, as if a jolt of electricity had just raced through her body. Of course it's true, she snapped, then felt guilty for being so abrupt. He can see through me, Angelique realized. He can see right into my soul. Tavalera seemed to be blissfully unaware of their interplay. I'm looking forward to meeting the Archbishop, he said easily. Maybe he can get me back to Goddard. In due time, Raoul, Stoner said, still focused on Angelique. In due time. But Angelique was thinking, he can see through to my very soul. If he's not a god, he's something very close to it. Apologia pro vita sua by Yolanda Vasquez. It's sad to see people turn into sheep. It's sadder still when you realize that nobody forced them into it. They've done it to themselves. It was the day of the bridges that broke the camel's back. I suppose that's a poor metaphor. But what I mean is that when the terrorists struck so hard, so brutally, the people yelled bloody murder. They wanted vengeance. They wanted to make sure terrorists could never, never hurt us so badly again. The Golden Gate Bridge, the Brooklyn Bridge, and the Sunshine Skyway Bridge over Tampa Bay in Florida. Terrorists blew up all three on the same day, the same hour, almost at the same minute. Killed nearly 1,000 innocent people. It had been nearly 50 years since the first big terrorist attack that destroyed the World Trade Center towers back in 2001. People were shocked out of their wits. You see, two entire generations had grown up without worrying about terrorism. They thought it was a thing of the past. Suddenly they were frightened. Suddenly they realized that they weren't safe. And they were angry. Enraged at the shadowy, menacing terrorists and the robed, turbaned people in other lands who danced in the streets at our disaster. Furious with the so-called Homeland Security Department, which had obviously failed to protect our homeland security. I remember one congressman who had been loudly attacking the Transportation Security Agency for making it so inconvenient to get through an airport. Apparently, his 6-year-old granddaughter had set off an alarm when she'd gone through the screening procedure, and they had to strip-search the little girl. Enraged, the congressman threatened to sponsor legislation that would shut down the TSA altogether. But after the day of the bridges, he screamed even louder that the government has to do something to protect us from these vicious killers. The president declared a day of mourning and a state of emergency. The Congress passed a war powers resolution by a huge margin. The American flag flew from every household, every automobile, every church and school and public building. The new morality stepped in and accepted a contract from Washington to take over the duties of the Homeland Security Department. Some people objected that a faith-based organization shouldn't be receiving federal funding, not even for such an obviously non-religious policing task. But the new morality declared that the objectors were terrorist sympathizers, and they were quickly rounded up and put in jails or internment camps. You're either for us or against us, they said, drumming the slogan into the public's mind with endless TV interviews, newscasts, and advertisements. Most people were for them. They wanted security, and that's what the new morality gave them, hard and fast. The new morality clamped down on terrorists, real or suspected. In the name of security, the people gave away their liberties. When the Supreme Court tried to close the faith-based internment centers that the new morality supervised, the White House invoked the president's war powers to maintain and even enlarge the camps. And the Congress passed a constitutional amendment that ended the lifetime appointments of Supreme Court justices and replaced it with mandated retirement. Within less than a year, the amendment was ratified by the states almost unanimously. Half the Supreme Court was forcibly retired, replaced by men handpicked by the new morality. So, the new morality not only saved the nation, the whole of North America, from the calamity caused by the climate changes, they protected the people from the ever-present threat of terrorist attacks. Similar faith-based movements had arisen all over the world. The Holy Disciples in Europe, the Light of Allah — terrorism was a much bigger problem in the Middle East than elsewhere, actually — the New Tao, and the Red Chrysanthemum in Asia. Everywhere, people chose order and safety over their own individual liberties. Of course, in most parts of the world, the people had never known much in the way of individual liberties. They just went the way they were told to go. It was sad to see Americans going that way, too. The years rolled on, one after another. Even though much of the United States was gripped in a decades-long drought and many seacoast cities had been flooded, all became peaceful. Even though there had not been a terrorist attack in the United States since the day of the bridges, the war on terror raged on in Latin America, Africa, Indonesia, and the Muslim strongholds in the mountains of Central Asia. In America, thanks to the new morality, governments from the national level down to neighborhood associations were firm in their pursuit of peace and safety and order. The corruption, the vice, the godlessness that had brought on the greenhouse disaster had been replaced by sanctity, discipline, and obedience. The terrorists who threatened attack were rounded up and put away before they could spill blood. Dissidents who protested about individual rights and the due process of law were swiftly silenced, sent to labor camps and re-education centers. Some were even permanently exiled from Earth. A team of scientists trying to study the way the brain works invented a deep brain stimulator. It used tiny electrical currents to activate sections of the brain, or deactivate them. With DBS, you could turn a homicidal maniac into a peaceful, smiling zombie, or a placard-waving dissident into a placid couch potato. The government latched on to DBS. Oh, yes, they did. That was one form of secularist science that the new morality blessed and promoted, vigorously. Yes, there was talk of international tensions. There's always talk of international tensions. The war to root out terrorist regimes wherever they existed simmered on, as did the fruitless, frustrating war against drugs. Some American politicians wanted to annex Canada for its wheat belt and abundant resources of fresh water. Some feared that the fragile détente with Greater Iran and its dominions in the Middle East would inevitably break down and the bloodletting of a half-century earlier would resume. But at home, all was quiet and peaceful, even though food prices and the costs for energy slowly but constantly ramped upward. We were safe in our beds, thanks to the everlasting vigilance of the new morality. And the sheep grazed on. Chapter 3. Stoner projected his presence deep into the asteroid belt, to the rock that held the artifact. It had been moved from its original orbit, he knew. Out in the dark emptiness of the belt, small chunks of rock and metal glided in a broad, intricate pavane, jostling back and forth, their paths constantly changing as their minuscule gravitational forces perturbed each other's orbits. Sometimes they came close enough to collide in crashes and side swipes that broke new pebbles and stones off the larger bodies, adding new asteroids to the millions already populating the belt.